Said he would come down with a new style. He saved my brain free from reality with me. This time around, well, you can see that there ain't nothing but you and me. And we know
mom.
It's been turtles all the way down.
And that you're not real.
All the way down.
I'm not real. Time.
You're really unreal.
Time's not a thing.
By that I mean you don't exist.
And God.
I don't either.
Not a thing, but you're also God. It's complicated. We should probably start the show.
Hi, everybody. Seamus Harvey here at Sacred Shame. We're going to have a wonderful interview here tonight talking with Dino Rossi from Cryptic Views, another podcast here on anchor.fm. Now, Dino, he talks about a lot of the same stuff I do. He's discussing his spiritual journey, keys that he's finding to success down here in the third dimension. And Dino and I were supposed to talk a couple of weeks ago, but Dino is an African American, and it's been a rough couple of weeks for everybody, but especially for the African American community. So I was very fortunate and very pleased to be able to jump on with Dino tonight. We talk about forgiveness and not being afraid, even when everything's fucking weird. And it's a great episode. It's a little long for me, but I think it's worth it. And I think you guys are going to enjoy this. So I'm gonna drop a commercial in here a little early, and then just let this one run. Hope you guys are doing great. Thank you for tuning in to The Sacred Shame. I am Seamus Harvey.
Hey everyone, Seamus Harvey here. Super excited to talk about my new sponsor, Ama Healing, amahealing.co. They are manufacturers and purveyors of fine hemp extracts, CBD products, phytocannabinoids, all of the good health things to get your body in the best shape possible from a mentality and focus standpoint. And I use these fuckers every day. Literally, their CBD extract and their Elevate Elixir, I credit with basically keeping me alive. If you're a listener to the show, you'll know that I've been dealing with cancer for the last 6 months or so, and just from the cancer and the inflammation and the treatment for the cancer, I feel foggy in the brain a lot of the time. And the products from AmaHealing.co, specifically the CBD oil, hemp extract, and the Elevate Elixir, are really doing so much to keep me from being foggy and just feeling like blah. And the team is amazing. Matt, Ted, all the guys and gals and peoples at AmaHealing.co. Love you guys so much. Go to AmaHealing, AmaHealing.co. Use the code BUCKCANCER and maybe get a little discount from your boy Seamus Harvey. Again, that's AmaHealing, AmaHealing.co. I am Seamus Harvey.
2 weeks, man. It's been very difficult. But yeah, man, I'm in good spirits, man.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, because I mean, it's been so fucking stressful for me, and I'm white, you know? I mean, there's not really another way to put it, right?
It's
you
a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual thing. It's not, okay, so some people might say, all right, and I'm glad, like, this is the topic I get to kind of vent, because I kind of keep these things, like, bottled in. I haven't even done a podcast because I was so outraged in the last 2 weeks. But, you see, this is the thing. It's between light and darkness. It's not a race thing. It is a race thing on the surface level. I mean, that's what it is in the 3D, but it's really not. It's really light versus dark. And I think a lot of people get so fixated on race because of the system, because of how the system is designed. But really and truly, you and I both know. Really, what separates, what makes people who they are in terms of the race, like how they're made up and stuff like that, is how they've adapted to their environment. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Really and truly, just one thing. But because of the system that we live in, again, and how people are kind of like accustomed to just living, you know, people are persecuted because of their race. And, you know, it's complete bullshit, bro, you know?
It's complete bullshit. And, yeah. You know, as someone who talks about, thinks about, like, spiritual side of basically everything that we do, and trying to, personally, I don't believe in the concept of good and evil, but I believe in suited for a purpose and not suited for a purpose. And if the purpose that we're all trying to do is to live in peace and harmony and, like, grow as people, like, the shit that we're doing right now is completely not suited for that at all.
Right.
And it's just, it's so difficult. Like, here in New Orleans, we had the second or third night of the protest, the cops just fucking opened fire tear gas grenades into the crowd, you know? And that's, you know, I was in the Army, you know, back before I knew any better. And I actually did chemical warfare reconnaissance. I actually ran a tear gas chamber for the Army. And huge part of what they talk about is like, we're doing this to learn so that you know how to react when you get tear gas, but the use of tear gas is a war crime. We would never do that in a battlefield. But so then why is it okay to do it to a civilian population that you're supposed to be protecting? It's just like, it's absurd.
You know something, and you've been in the Army. Well, you were in the Army. I know quite a bit of people that have been in the Army, and I've been told about, and this wasn't something that I knew about before last year. I mean, it's something that I kind of suspected, but I didn't really know. But somebody told me about spoils of war. You know what I mean? And it's like one group, I don't know which one it is, but it's like they go in, I think it might be the Marines, I'm not quite sure, but they go in and they shoot things up or whatever, and then in comes another group. And it's like that's the group that takes the resources from the place that they just went, basically looting.
Yeah. So what's funny is they actually have terms for it so that they don't call it looting. So,
right.
So spoils of war in terms of like the soldiers themselves going in and keeping trophies and stuff like that. Like it's actually highly frowned upon, but not really because they don't want it to happen. It's more because the government wants to make sure they get everything. So, you know, like, we had instances of people smuggling stuff back, like packing up the walls of holes with spoils taken from Iraq and shit. Cause you know, when it invaded Saddam's palace, I mean, there's just gold and cash lying around, like it was, you know, paperweights. There's definitely that, but I mean, like, yeah, it's 100%. It's why we go in. We go in because there's a resource there, whatever that resource may be. Whatever we use, whatever cover story that we need to justify us going in there. But it's always, almost always, or something oil, potentially related to oil, like land that we need to build a pipeline for oil. It's always something like that. It's never freedom. It's never, you know. It's such a basic analogy, but it's like the whole like fighting for peace is like fucking for virginity. Like it doesn't make any, you know, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing. That's why. Okay. So, and you just said you don't really believe in good or evil, and I could understand. I mean, basically, based on the things that you've been through, based on the world that you live in, I kind of get it. I get at one point. I'm not even going front. Like when I was explaining something to someone in, I believe it was February, before this whole huge pandemic started, I was kind of explaining something to someone along the lines of what you were just talking about, not believing in the concept of good or evil, but things just are. And it's just basically just expansion. And, you know, when you kind of look at the world, when you look at the universe, it has various different things happen on the planet. Like you'll have a hurricane, you have a tornado, the next day you might have sun, you might have rain. You understand what I'm saying? So the world goes through its phases as well of certain things that are called, maybe deemed good or evil. But at the same time, from a just a connected standpoint, you know, it's just certain things that I personally wouldn't do to someone else. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just, I'm just not going to do something to someone else that I wouldn't want that person to do to me. Now, at the end of the day, am I a perfect person? No. Do I have violent tendencies? Absolutely. But at the same time, it's like, if something is justified, if I have a justified reason, because I'm not going to be like fake righteous or anything like that, to be violent, then I absolutely, if it's necessary, I will. You understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you mean. And I think that, right. I think probably most of my listeners would probably agree with that statement. That's something in myself that I'm working on. Because like ultimately I think that violence is never, I think it's never really the answer. And I think that violence begets more violence.
You're right.
In a situation like this, it's very hard, you know, to, you know, and like, I've got children, I've got, you know, two daughters and a son, and, you know, I can say that I don't believe in violence, but if someone was going to hurt my children, like, I don't know, you know, me being like, no, stop, don't, like, that's not, that wouldn't be enough, you know?
Exactly.
Like, so it's like, right. these are the struggles that we have with being fucking human, you know, like,
yep.
But
I mean, just finding that delicate balance between spirituality and the ego. I think a lot of people, especially people in the spiritual community, a lot of times they tell you, listen, the ego's not good. Neglect your ego. Listen, you're just spirit. But the fact of the matter is, if you neglect your ego or if you leave your ego behind, you cease to exist. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you're here on this planet. And you know, ego, it's a word. It carries a lot of negative things with it. But at the same time, like, you have the ego for a reason. It's just that you have to find a delicate balance between spirituality and the ego. You have to know which one is talking at what point. And sometimes I catch myself in certain moments where it's like, I kind of let the ego through and I'm still at this, like, it's on autopilot. And I'm in my head, I'm like, yo, like, why are you allowing this to happen while I'm doing it? And it's like, I can't even turn it off. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so you're touching on something I talk about a lot on the show, which is that we're these cosmic superpositions, right? Which is a superposition is a statement from physics, which is basically like you exist in two states at the same time. So like Schrodinger's cat is the example that they use, which is like, is a cat in a box with like poison gas, and the canister of poison gas could break at any time. So while the box is closed, that cat is technically dead and alive at the same time, because you can't actually tell which one he is, so he's both. But so I talk about cosmic superposition, that we are all this universal consciousness, that we're all connected, whether like we want to admit that or not. Like we're there's this connection that runs through all of us, and we are in everything, and that we are all one, and we are these fucking schmucks in the third dimension, you know, that are just being crazy bullshit all the time. And it's just kind of like what you said, it's a balance, that we are both of those things.
Yeah.
One's not better than the other. One's not superior to the other. So it's like you said, if you neglect either one of those, you kind of get fucked, right? And and I think that's where lots of people screw up. Like, you know, if you go to the mountains of the Himalayas and you just like spend your whole life in seclusion, meditating and shit like that, that's great. You were really taking care of the spiritual side, but why were you here in the first place? Was that the whole purpose, was just to hole up in a hut in the icy mountains? No, it's not. You know, that's like, you could have done that from wherever. Like, you're here. All of us are here. We all have some purpose, some reason we're down here to do something, you know, and that's going to be different for everybody. And so, while I don't believe in good and evil, I do believe in better. And so it's like, whatever, like every choice that you make, everything that you do is getting you closer or further away to where you're supposed to be going. If if, like I said, as a society, if we're really trying to like, you know, to lift everybody up and have a safe place where like we can live free from anxiety and like everybody's doing better, like, we've been making some choices that are not getting us closer to that. They're moving us further away from it. And this, this police in this country are just out of fucking control.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? You know what? Honestly, bro, like, I have hope. And I think my generation and the generation, you know, my daughter, like, my daughter, she's in New York. She's two. I don't know what generation she falls under. But, like, in terms of, like, the millennials and the ones after us, I'm seeing where there's, like, a shift in just the way how they think. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, okay, so they're millennials that are very spiritual. There's some that do it kind of because it's like, well, you know what? It's like the cool, hip, new thing, new, weird. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a hot yoga, and I need to learn about my spiritual side. Yeah, no, I totally
Right. But then there's those that kind of just immerse themselves in it. And what I'm witnessing, man, like the young people and people that are like 18, 19, 17 years old that are kind of leading the protest. And it's like they're leading with just fearlessness. And it's like, you know, from the generation before, like before my generation especially, I'd say like my father's generation, they were a lot more like submissive and listen, like turn the other cheek and, you know, like nonviolence or whatever it was. But I feel like this generation, it's kind of like, yo, listen, we're not going to have it anymore. It's like this persisted for generation after generation. It's like what we're at, we're not at because we're so cool. My generation, we grew up with everyone. You understand what I'm saying? And of course, we experience racism. But at the same time, we don't experience racism to the degree that the generations before us do. And it's like you have kids, we grow up, and it's like you got a friend and he's white and it's cool. You got a friend and he's Hispanic and it's like you guys are just cool. You guys just look at each other as people. And it's like a person that might not even be black, because a lot of people that are doing this protest and is not, they're not even black. They look at that person that's being hurt as an extension of themselves. It's like, yo, that person right there is being hurt by this person, even though this person is the same color as me. I just got to call it as it is, because that could be my friend. You understand what I'm saying? Or that could be somebody that you get it. Yeah. So I'm really proud of the strides that this generation has taken. And it's like, we're standing up to, you know, the older generation that kind of like the hypocrisy of the older generation and the brutality and the abuse of power of the older generation. We're saying, no, listen, we've had enough. And you have to approach it with a spirit of fearlessness. Because it's like, you and I both know energy cannot be created nor destroyed.
Nope.
You know, we've existed forever and we're just gonna continue to exist.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, something like this, right? When I looked at the George Floyd situation and I was watching the video, while I'm watching the video, like I'm just there and I'm shaking my head because it's people like telling you to stop. The guy is telling you can't breathe, but you guys are still backing up the crowd and you guys don't care that he's afraid. You don't care that the people are telling you to stop. It's like you're just so it's like, I don't know what it was that happened, but he's just so disconnected from the environment that was around him. And it was just so nonchalant the way that he did it. And it just had me, like, my ego was just so outraged by, like, this guy doing this. You know what I mean?
So
that it was like, yeah.
Go ahead, sorry. The podcast I did yesterday is my longest podcast. I've broken into two parts, and each one is individually would be my longest podcast. And it was the whole thing about how there's no such thing as a good police. And it just kind of goes through all of what I see as why policing in North America is fundamentally a broken concept, and that it's not something we can fix from within. It's something we have to scrap and get something different. And so one of the things that you talked about just now about the, you know, it would seem to anybody watching, hey, this guy is saying he can't breathe. Hey, the people in the crowd are like, stop doing it. Hey, you know, you're fucking hurting this dude. And it's like, it's almost like they're robots, right? It's almost like they don't even see that. And so I talk about the problem with chunking, which is a mental concept where you basically, like, you take diaspora, you take separate events, and your brain wants to make a pattern out of them. So it groups it together into one thing. And our police, we're all guilty of it to some degree, but the police in this country have stopped seeing the people they're protecting as individuals, and they start putting them into these labeled categories. And then when you get that far enough down in those categories, you stop seeing them as people. It literally stops registering to you, this is a human being. This is a perpetrator. This is an insurgent. This is a aggressor. It's not a person. You're not even seeing that. And so when you do that, well, if they're not a human, why do I have to be humane?
You know something else? I'm glad you touched on that. Because the environment that they've been put in, not just the physical environment, but the, how would you say it now? Like, you know, working in the office around the other officers and having to hit a quota, like, okay, well, I need this amount of tickets by the end of the month. I need this amount of arrests by the end of the month. And especially in New York, I don't know how it works in other places, but I know it's
somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what right. you're talking about is something that I don't think it's crazy to me that so many people don't get this, is that they don't understand that the police are like businessmen. It's like, literally, it's like, I have to make this much money or like, I'm at risk of like getting my pay cut or whatever. And like, it boggles your mind to think that it could be something like arrests or citations or something like that could have a quota that you need to make. Like, shouldn't your goal be to like, try to like, get as little of them as possible, like you're
right.
trying to do situations, you're trying, but like it's completely not that. So the incentivization for police right now is just so
right. So let me ask you now, knowing that, right, and inevitably, because how the universe works, there's always going to be a pushback whenever people are oppressed, and a volcano could lay dormant for thousands of years, right? And when it erupts, it erupts. That's how the universe works. That's how karma works. That's how everything works. You understand what I'm saying? So inevitably, there's going to be a pushback. How can a system sustain itself when it's taking advantage of any group of people? You understand what I'm saying? Like, there's no where it's like you marginalize one group of people or minorities or whatever, and you say, all right, cool. Well, you know what? No resources for you, all resources for me. On the outside looking in, and anyone with a perspective could kind of look at it like, whoa, wow, okay, so you guys are just gonna keep all the food. Like, just imagine somebody just had like a freaking, you know, like a grill on the kitchen or a padlock on the kitchen, on the fridge door. And every time you wanted to go get something from it, you had to go through this guy. And he decided whether or not you were going to get, you know, a sandwich or whatever it is. Eventually, it's going to be like, no, get the fuck out the way. I'm hungry. I want to get something from the, you understand what I'm saying? And yes, it's kind of like, I feel like everybody could kind of put themselves in that, like, that frame of mind where they could kind of look at it objectively. But I feel like some people just choose not to. Like, I had this one guy, right, by the name of Corey Wayne, and I was just so very disappointed in this guy. Like, a lot of the stuff that he was kind of, like, spewing out on social media. And it comes down to me, myself, kind of projecting how I feel about other people onto them, or projecting me personally, the way how I look at the world, onto them. And, like, just the things that this guy was saying, man, I just could not believe. Because here we have a guy who's so articulate, who knows so much about the world, who knows so much about women in particular, because that's pretty much why you click it, because this guy has so much knowledge about women. And when you look at his views, like how bigoted his views are, it's like, wow, well, that side of you, I didn't really know existed, because here it looks like you had such an open mind, but it's like you're so close-minded at the same time.
You're talking about this phenomenon, which is like this cancer that I've seen over the last 5-10 years online, which is that you'll see creators, so people that like have, they're creating content and they start out meaning well, earnest, like their stuff's good, you know, seems open-minded, whatever, and then generally, like their natural progression, they'll do one piece of content, one podcast, one video, whatever. And they'll touch upon something that's kind of controversial, and they'll say something, and generally like a borderline statement. And then they'll get so many people that'll jump in and be like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Fuck those people. And then, you know, if you're a content creator and you're relying on views for your income, and then you're like, hold on, if I just say shit like this, I get 10 times more people that will look at this. Well, maybe the next time, maybe I'll go a little further down the road. And then, you know, a couple of years later, they're just spewing fucking hate and vitriol and terrible shit. And their numbers are great, but they're just saying the fucking worst shit on earth. And it's, you know, it's a fucked up incentivization game. So it's like, I've been on the police thing all over again.
I'm happy with
the number of views that I'm getting, but like it's always gonna be like this for me. If it's like just me and my mom listening, that's great. And if it's like that's cool too. But my mom would never listen to the show. It is a problem. It's definitely a problem because
it's the system, the world. It's just what we live in. Because you just touched on that with the police as well. I got to get this much amount of tickets in order to freaking survive, basically. And here you have a guy that's online and he's creating this content or whatever. And it's like maybe in the pandemic, nobody's looking at him. Everybody's kind of looking at COVID-19 stuff or, you know, Black Lives Matter stuff now. So he's like, well, you know what? Let me weigh in on this. And part of me looked at it like, yeah, he might be pulling a Tekashi because what he's really putting up is a lot of vague stuff, but he wants to kind of do it in order to kind of get clicks, get people to comment, get such and such and such. But I kind of told him, dude, because it's like, I don't know, man, like me personally, and I kind of said this before, right? Back when the COVID-19 kind of started, I feel like a lot of people were isolating Asians. And I made a video about it because I was outraged at that as well. And I was particularly talking to Black people about it because the bigotry I heard, it was like, yo, like, really? Like, you're really going to sit up here and talk about Asians that way when your ancestors and my ancestors know precisely what it's like to be hated on because of the color of our skin or our ethnic background and shit like that, and you're really doing this? You know what I mean? Like, I'm the type of person that'll do that because I could put myself in other people's shoes. And I know, you know what? That's not something that I would want somebody to treat. I wouldn't want somebody to treat me like that. That person must feel like shit. I'm not going to tolerate it. But there are some people that are just like, listen, I got to look at this as if it's business. I can't immerse myself. It's sort of like a lucid dream. Well, you know, I'm in control of me. Those people are led by their emotions. They're led by, you know, the media and everything that else that's going on. Let me use this to my advantage. So yeah, part of me kind of did, you know, think about it in that way. But at the same time, it's still, you're still a douche for it, in my opinion, you know?
I agree. I agree completely. And it's just that, and you know, I'll bastardize it, but it's that whole, like, you know, I didn't stick up when they came for the Jews because I wasn't a Jew. And then I didn't stick up for the homosexuals when they, you know, came with homosexuals because I wasn't homosexual. But then they came for me and there was no one left around because they, you know, like, it's that sort of thing, which is like, you know, it's
just, yeah, I'm going to tell you, it's really a gift in the
doing to others like you would have done to you.
Yeah. Sorry about that, man. It's really, honestly, bro, it's really a gift and a curse because, okay, so my parents are Jamaican. So like having Jamaican roots, right? Me, I kind of went back to Jamaica a few times. I went to Jamaica in high school at one point, and the society in Jamaica is extremely homophobic. And you kind of brought up that way in, you know, coming from a Jamaican household, you understand what I'm saying? Especially like with my, it's like a no-no, it's completely taboo. But you see, the thing is, for me, while I'm not homosexual, I don't really have the right to tell that person not to be homosexual. I know who I am. I know how I feel about women. That's cool. That's how I feel. You don't have to feel the same way. But the thing is, like, a lot of times, and it'll be like so open, like people will openly in the classroom talk bad about gay people and all of that. And I don't have to agree with what they do. But at the same time, I remember one time I was so freaking nervous because, mind you, this 35 or so people in the classroom. It's a big classroom. And the teacher was saying some really homophobic stuff, right? And I'm there and I'm sitting down and I'm thinking to myself, like, yo, people are actually co-signing this shit. Like, the entire classroom is agreeing with the shit that she's saying right now. And I remember being so fucking nervous, But like, honestly, bro, like I was trembling, but like I just felt the need. And this, again, the detachment from the ego. Like, I kind of just felt like I needed to do it, and it just kind of went. And while I was talking, saying the stuff that I was saying, a part of me was like, yo, bro, what the fuck are you doing? You understand what I'm saying? You're completely outnumbered here. But at the same time, bro, like, you know, we talk about, like, I spoke about Christ consciousness in one of my episodes.
Yeah.
Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Like, if I rape somebody, whatever the consequences of that shit is, it doesn't matter. You understand what I'm saying? Because I shouldn't put myself in that position. If I do something to kids, it does not matter. I should not put myself in that position. So for me, if somebody were to do something like that to somebody that I care about, you know, what you said about violence, I do kind of, I would just have to just accept the consequences of whatever comes with it. Because me personally, like as a man, I just can't, I don't know how to disconnect myself from feeling like I have to protect those people that I care about. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So yeah, man. But yeah.
It's a weird world out there.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. You know, you think it's weird enough because we got this pandemic and everybody's on house arrest, all this shit, and then followed up with systemic racism and murdering people in the streets. It's just, it's nuts. It's weird.
So what's your take on this, man? Because all right, so there's people in the spiritual, quote unquote, spiritual community, right? People that I kind of, you know, network with. I really just kind of just observe. You understand what I'm saying? I'm just being. I just am. But it's like they're talking about it being conspiracy theorists, or they're talking about these conspiracy theories about how like Antifa and, you know, the government, and it's like these people are kind of just, you know, fabricating this stuff and putting it out there, and you guys are falling for the trap and this, that, and the third. And a part of me, like, I don't want to, like, just toss them to the woods and say, oh, these people are crazy or whatever. But at the same time, I don't want to be so completely irresponsible that I'm neglecting, like, my duty as a human being. You understand what I'm saying? To see somebody that's in distress, or to see something repetitively happening and to just completely ignore it and not do anything to try to, you know what I mean? Not to say you're resisting it, but not doing anything to try to change the course of how things are going. So, you know what I mean?
I have kind of an out there take on the whole situation, which is that, I think that the reason life is as difficult as it is because we are these immortal beings. Like, their energy's never destroyed, it's never created. We just keep going on and on doing this shit over and over and over and over again, right? And because I do believe that we're all here for a purpose. You know, if you've ever played a video game and you play it with cheat codes, it's just real boring, real quick. Like, having everything you could possibly want, like, a do whatever you want, not have to struggle for it, not, it just shows up. You think that's fun until you do it. And then it's fun for like a minute or 2 minutes, and then it's really freaking boring. And so the struggles that we all have and that we're dealing with collectively and individually here, I think it's because we're playing this on hard mode because we like it. We like a challenge. That's why it's as fucking difficult as it is. But you know, when it's this visceral, when it's your neighbors getting murdered in the streets, but protecting you, it's hard to lose sight of shit like that, you know? I don't know on it. I know that we are gonna continue going on whatever we do here, and then probably gonna have to come back and do it again because we screwed up the time, you know. But it's difficult. So, I mean, I think that you have to kind of like take a detached view of the whole situation sometimes and be like, all right, so what's working, what's not working? Let's look at this objectively. And I think police in this country aren't working. They're not doing anything that we collectively believe that they should be doing. Nobody feels safer because the police are there. If anything, people feel significantly less safe, you know, like whenever we're just like out doing our business and then there's a cop, nobody feels like, oh great, I'm like more protected. They're like, shit, cops here, fucking, like, this
you feel subordinate
quick, right? Like, I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah.
So it's in Atlanta. Man, I'm gonna fuck it up. But there's that private community that's like, I'll put it in the show notes. But it's like there's an area up there that like they don't have cops. Like it's all private security. There's no police officers aren't in there. Like it's like, I feel stupid that I can't think of this because I've had friends that live in there. But consistently, it's like it's less crime, less violence, less all this stuff. And it's because when you put if you're a private contractor for security, and you fuck up, well, you lose your job. You know, that's the private sector. You know, and it's like there is no like, he meant well. You know, that's essentially a government outlook. You know, that like let's keep him on even though he's got 10 complaints against him. Like even at McDonald's, you can't do that. Right? It's like if 10 customers come in and tell your manager that you like fucked up the fries, like you don't have a job anymore. I think there's some sort of probably a private solution that's better for it. And we've got to disentangle this whole incentivized law enforcement where it's like cops need to be, or whoever suing security needs to be free to like keep the peace and not have this quota of like, man, I got to do this. I got to keep these numbers going. It's a big problem. There's no easy way. There's no like clean way to just make it all better. But
yeah, because it's so deep, bro. It's really a systemic thing. It's like when you corporatize prisons, when you privatize prisons, when people are making so much money off of these inmates that are in prisons. These are the things that fuels the economy. And it's like, we're just gonna stop fueling the economy. That's kind of like how they're looking at it. And it's like, who can we possibly use to fuel the economy? And this is how deep it goes. Well, let's continue to use the people that we've been using for a very long time, right? So while slavery was outlawed in 18 God knows when in America, right? Because it was before that in the Caribbean. But while it was outlawed, whatever that day was that it was outlawed, right? Even though people weren't necessarily on the plantation became the prison.
Agreed.
You understand what I'm saying?
I agree with that completely.
Right.
There's some shit to be said for before we had all of the affirmative action, equal rights shit. But some stuff was better because you knew who the fucking straight up racists were because they were free to talk about how fucking racist they were. So you're like, oh, that dude's fucking racist. I'm not gonna support that guy. But now it's like everybody still is racist. They just like hide it. They just like they use specialized words. You know what I mean? It's like it's all on the download now. It's not less. In government, specifically when you talk about government policies and stuff like that, it's like the racism is still rampant. It's just they have a different terminology for it now. It's fucked.
So, I mean, knowing that, we know that it's a systemic thing. And while the pendulum is swinging, because, you could kind of see where there's a sort of like it's changing a little bit. Where it's like, where it was all the way up here, it's kind of like, and I don't know if it's because of the media, because of the things that we're kind of tuning into, but definitely people are taking action and people are being heard. And there are more people that are empathizing with people that don't look like themselves because they're not looking at that person as just someone that's of a different race. They're not looking at it two-dimensional like that. They're like, nah, you know what? That's my friend. That's a human being. I can't imagine life without that person, even though that person is not the same color as I am. And here I am around a whole bunch of people who are the same color as I am, and we don't have anything in common, but I have more in common with this person. And you understand what I'm saying? So yeah. I want to keep that around. I want to keep that going because that's the person that, you know what I mean? So people are more, especially like I said, especially my generation, are more understanding of people of other races. And of course we do have our bigots. We do have racist people in our generation. Like, you know, you understand what I'm saying? Again, ego. But at the same time, I feel like now things are changing, man. Like, things are definitely changing. And I don't know how rapid the change is going to happen, but we're living in, honestly, 2020, ever since it started, it's been like a millennium in 1 year. Think about everything that happened.
It feels like this year feels like a lifetime. This is the long, by far, this is the longest I've lived in my 41 years. These last 4 months have been longer than the 41 years prior to that, you know? But yeah, I think, you know, we touched on it earlier. I think that, like, really our kids are going to get, like, this shit's not going to make any sense to our children. This kind of, you know, overt racism. Like, my kids are, my oldest is 16, and none of this makes any sense to them. They're like, why would you even think about caring what their race, like what color their skin was? That's absurd, you know? And so it does give me a lot of hope that we are, you know, we are doing things. And you know, the response here has been different than it's ever been before, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very hopeful thing, because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly and thinking you're going to get a different result. And we're not doing the same shit now, you know. We're changing the script, and yeah, I hope it works out. You know, it will eventually. It will eventually. Yeah. I hope I get to see some of it. You know,
I have belief, man. And the thing is, like, I believe in karma, and I think a lot of times when how karma works is like this, right? I was listening to Napoleon Hill years ago, and he spoke about, like, the law of increasing return, right? And he spoke about, like, if you plant, like, one grain of rice in the field, the universe or the world doesn't give you back one grain of rice. It gives you a multitude, a whole multitude of it, right? So anything that you do, pardon me, or say to another individual, you do or say that same thing to yourself. And it's like, you want it, if it doesn't come back quick, it's going to be compound interest upon compound interest. And eventually when it does come back, it's going to be something so big that you're going to be like, God damn. And you're not even going to know that it was that one thing that you did earlier that kind of made this happen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's balance, you know, everything has to come swing towards equilibrium. It just has to. That's it. Napoleon Hill's great. I've read a bunch of his stuff.
Yeah. I used to listen to his stuff religiously, bro. Like Napoleon Hill, bro, like hours and hours of just listening to the thing. And it's basically, I don't know why I chose to listen to it so often. I think maybe it was sort of like escapism from, like, the world that was going on around me, like, the stuff that was going on. And I wasn't smoking any weed at the time. you know what I mean? So it was like, I don't know if I just wanted to kind of, like, you know, like, live in a bubble or exactly what was going on. But it was like Napoleon Hill kind of took my, you know what I mean, just listening to him, it spoke to something inside me that was just like, well, you know what? I believe a lot of the stuff that this guy is saying. Whatever you believe in and conceive, you can achieve. Those things.
He's one of the first guys that has, like, mainstream credibility that talks about magical thinking. He talks about that, like, your intention and that, like, you create the world that you live in, and that, like, that by speaking what you want to accomplish, that you're actually, like, calling that forth to you, which, you know, then it's gotten remixed. That's what The Secret is. That's just Think and Grow Rich. It's just like, you know,
yeah,
the younger generation.
I think
that's it. That's what really appealed to me, was that he puts into words stuff that I was seeing, but I couldn't think, like, I hadn't put it together what I was seeing, because it's
right.
It couldn't be like that. It can't really just be like, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to accomplish these things, and I say it and then it happens. That's actually kind of how it works. So Napoleon Hill, definitely, he was the first person that it's not in the like crazy, you know, new age section that people just like write off as being fake or just being out there, that, you know, talks about magical thinking in a way where people are like, okay, cool. Cause he talks about it in terms of like positive visualization, which people can do the mental gymnastics to think like, oh, okay, well that's not really magic. That's just like being positive. And, you know, it's potato, potato. It's whatever you need to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. I started checking out this guy by the name of Dr. Joe Dispenza. Because, you know, when I really started this spiritual journey, right? Like I'm just going to be completely open with you. When I really started this spiritual journey, when I really immersed myself in the spirituality, I feel like maybe there was so much shadow aspects of my, like so many things that inside of me that I didn't know about, that when I started to embrace that shit, I feel like everything just started to go wrong in my life.
I think there's something to that, right? Because it's kind of like, oh, you understand more of this now. Okay, cool. We can like, then you can actually handle more. So let's turn the bullshit up. Well, I experienced the same thing. It's like when I was like, oh, okay, so this is why things are starting. This makes sense. And then the universe is kind of like, oh, cool. You playing on a different level now? Yeah, me too. And just turns it up. I've totally experienced the same thing, you know?
Bro, like, I shit you not, bro. Like, it's like, and I'm going to be completely honest with you, right? Forgiveness was never something that I was really good at. And I feel like, from early on, because I could remember stuff from when I was 2 years old. But from early on, right, I kind of realized that about myself. And it's like when my aunts used to like watch like The Bold and the Beautiful and Young and Restless and all that sort of stuff. I remember just sitting there and kind of like looking at it and, oh, if that bitch ever did that to me, I'd never forgive her. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Like a kid, I'm a kid kind of saying this stuff to myself. Like, yo, she ever did that to me, I'd never forgive her. Like I'd never talk to her again. I would just completely ignore her. And as I got older, it kind of like, I kind of saw where that was sort of the thing. Like, because I'm the type of person that if I react certain type of way, I might react and punch somebody or something, but certain things I'm not going to do. And if somebody does something that's so grimy to me, I'm probably never going to talk to that person again. And really and truly, in trying to hurt that person, I end up hurting myself because I'm not forgiving that person. And I haven't, honestly, until I started my spiritual journey, I haven't really started to really penetrate that forgiveness thing yet. Until now, when I was forced to forgive somebody because I had a child with them.
And that was such a huge world-opening experience to me, was realizing that, like, in holding this resentment and this beef against other people because I was trying to hurt them because I wanted to, like, punish them or whatever, that really I was just tearing myself up. And that you just, like, you're literally keeping this fire inside of you that's burning you, you know? And when you can realize that, like, you can not interact with that person again, you can protect yourself from future harm from them and still forgive them, you know? Like, you can still empathize with them and be like, wow, your life must have been really fucked up for you to make these sets of mistakes, you know, these decisions. I'm going to empathize with you. I'm going to forgive you for that. And it doesn't mean that you're going to sit there and continue to get abused. But that holding on, that resentment, it's just poison. It just,
oh yeah,
part of us. It's just like, killing us all, you know. And when you, like, my seeing it, in my father was actually, it's actually what led me down this path. Was seeing that my dad, when he was, you know, really old, he was 67 before he died of cancer. You know, that he had just held beef with people for 40, 50 years, and that it, you know, just that it was. Fucking killed him, you know? And fortunately, you know, in the last year of his life, he let all that shit go. He was like, I don't know why I held on to this shit for so long. Like, you know, that person did that to me and that sucked, but they had shit going on in their lives and I'll never know everything that they had to deal with. So, and, you know, it was really a beautiful thing to watch my old Southern redneck father real, you know, come to terms with all this really big shit, you know, because it is, it's just this holding up resentment, just it's just poison inside of all of us.
Absolutely and is, man.
Our mainstream media and our mainstream and the yeah. movies, everything that they teach you to hold on to that shit. They teach you that this is this. If you're not a man, if you're just gonna let shit slide, you know, it's just like all this crap. They just reinforce this terrible behavior in you.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on, man. But I feel like the universe kind of forced me, and that might be why I'm here. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's like I told you, it's something that I noticed when I was a really young kid that I'm not really good at forgiving. You understand what I'm saying? And it wasn't until I was forced to forgive somebody, like I said, because I had a kid with them and love my kid more than anything in the world, that I kind of came to terms with that shit, bro, to the point where I'm like, yo, listen, if it ever gets hard with you up there, you could always come down here and, you understand what I'm saying, and just, you know, kick it with us for a while, because I have a kid with her. You understand what I'm saying? And I love my kid. So it's like that's where the universe kind of hit me to show me, no, bro, like, you need to learn how to forgive. And as you said, you really touched on it. People go through certain things, and it's like that trauma, you know, those broken pieces, they haven't really picked up yet. You understand what I'm saying? So now when they interact with other people, they interact with that kind of spirit or that energy.
Yeah.
And they might not even be intentionally trying to hurt you, but that's just who they have immersed themselves into.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, everybody's dealing with their own shit. And, you know, the life that you're living, you're the only one that's ever going to experience it. You know, you're the conscious witness of your life. And I can look at your life and I can like try to piece stuff of it together, but I'm never gonna have that whole picture. Like, we're never gonna have the whole picture of what anybody else's circumstances are. So yeah, forgiveness is a big thing. It's tricky and it's hard as fuck sometimes.
It is.
You gotta do it.
It is. Especially when it's somebody that you love and they're repeatedly like hurting you, especially like with their like lies and manipulations and stuff like that. And kind of like I said, doing things that me personally, I just wouldn't do to them. It's like it amplifies it. You know what I mean? When it's like it's something that's just out of even your character. When it's like, yo, I wouldn't do that stuff to you. Like, that shit is so unfair. Like, why do you want to? And then that's when the anger kind of comes in. You understand what I'm saying?
And you you're talking about with your baby mama, like you see this where you see a couple, you know, hate each other and they've got kids together and they put the kids in the middle of it and it just becomes like this just like terrible tug of war.
Yep.
And then
yep.
the kids gets all the beef because the kid has all the, you know, all he grew up with, like, mom hate dad hate mom, and thinking that's okay. So when they grow up, that's the shit that they've got set up as a baseline for how relationships are supposed to be, and it becomes a vicious cycle. All of our responsibilities to break, you know.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Absolutely, dude. And yeah, I kind of realized that, right? With her and, you know, her mom being a single parent and all of that sort of stuff, and kind of like how she grew up. And, you know, generation to generation after trauma, just like being passed down. I noticed a lot of cycles that I felt like I was going to break as well. And it's still not too late, because my daughter's like, she just turned 3 the other day. Still not too late for me to break it. But at the same time, it's like a lot of cycles that, you know, when I look down at past generations, my grandfather, he was married twice and he stayed with his second wife until he died. My great grandfather on my mother's side, him and his wife, his first wife, they stayed together forever. But like with my mom and her father and that sort of situation where she didn't know her father growing up, she didn't meet her father until she was 26. And, or 25 to 26, 25. And, you know, kind of like going through life, having to go through life as a woman and witnessing her mother be abused by, the man that was supposed to protect her mother, right? Just witnessing that sort of thing growing up and her having to really defend her mom as a kid and throw stones at, and just like the stuff that she kind of describes how she had went through certain things. I kind of realized what myself, you know what I mean? Like how that affected me and how when she was with my father, how she wasn't able to really open up and kind of like have a relationship because of the things that she's experienced. And on, you know, well, I would say my wife, because we're still kind of quote unquote married. But, you know, her situation and how she grew up as well, and kind of growing up in, you know, similar sort of trauma, you know, it was just a recipe for disaster. And regardless of everything that I felt like I had done for her, you know, and the things that we kind of did for each other and all of that sort of stuff, you know, first of all, I didn't feel like, you know, certain things that she would have done. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I can't come up here and sit up like, you know, act like I was perfect. But at the same time, it was just certain things I just didn't feel was warranted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I realized the part that I played in it wasn't a big part. But at the same time, I realized the part that I played in it. And there's a lesson in it. There's so many lessons, you know, that I learned in that. And to be completely honest with you, like, it's been almost 2 years now since we've lived in the same household. And, you know, just like, kind of like, you know, talking to other women and kind of like dating other women, because we're separated. But dating other women and all of that sort of stuff, it's like I bring that trauma with me, that experience with me. You know what I mean? And Yeah. It's like I'm keeping these walls up and I'm not able to completely open up to these women because of the experience that I had before. So now it's affecting me in that way. But at the same time, it's like, as time progresses, you know, and they say time heals all wounds, it's to the point where it's like, well, you know what, man, it happened, but I can't stay stuck in the past. I realize that what I need to do in order to create a better future is to let go of the past. I can't keep constantly living in the past.
For sure. All you're ever going to have is this moment. All you're ever going to have is this moment right here.
That's it.
All you ever get is this right here.
That's it.
Well, it's a good place to wrap up. Had you introduce yourself. Why don't you like tell everybody where they can find you, talk about you, tell people where your podcast is.
Listen, man, the podcast is called Cryptic Views. You can find me on, you know, all platforms, pretty much the same platforms that you're on, Apple, Spotify, all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, this guy right here, he's pretty much on a similar vibe. You know, I can't go and say we're on the same exact vibe. But we're there. He's there, and I agree with a lot of stuff that he says. And yeah, man, I'm pretty much on all platforms, and then just talking about stuff like this.
Can you pronounce your name so that I don't screw it up?
Oh, nah. So I go by the name Dino Razzi. I mean, Razzi's been a nickname of mine since I was a kid. Dino is actually my middle name, just altered. But yeah, Dino Razzi.
Dino Razzi.
Yeah.
Dino Razzi,
all right,
thank you so much for coming on here. And the takeaways here are, forgiveness is hard, but you got to do that shit. And don't be afraid. And don't let them make you afraid. Because
burn fear.
That's it.
All right, bro. Thank you so much, man.
Appreciate it.
All right, man. Bye.